Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, sitting in for Brian. It's been a month since an article in Rolling Stone magazine led to the ousting of General Stanley McChrystal from command of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. His replacement, General David Petraeus, has said that the change in leadership won't mean a massive change in strategy, but a refocus on certain goals. At least he was saying that before yesterday's leak of more than 92,000 classified military documents published on the government transparency website WikiLeaks. These documents cover a period from 2004 to 2009 and paint a detailed picture of a war effort hampered by mistakes, local government corruption, and lack of resources. But do they reveal anything to fundamentally alter U.S. policy in Afghanistan or the perception of the war? To make sense of these new revelations, as well as reflect on how they could shape or reshape American policy in Afghanistan, we're joined by Steve Clemens, director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and the man behind the popular political blog The Washington Note, and Jane Perlez, a New York Times reporter, the chief correspondent in Pakistan, who's been working through the thousands of leaked documents and has been writing the Times coverage. Welcome to WNYC to both of you.
It's great to be with you.
First to you, Jane, how did this work? I understand that WikiLeaks gave you and some of your colleagues access to these documents weeks ago.
WikiLeaks got in touch with the New York Times, and the New York Times was given access to these along with The Guardian in London and Der Spiegel in Germany. And yes, we were allowed to take a first look about 3.5 weeks ago, I think.
How did you even begin to make your way through 92,000 reports like this?
We were greatly assisted by our wonderful colleague who went through them in what we call computer-assisted reporting. And he was able to organize them in a way on a very powerful search engine, the details of which is because I'm just a non-computer reporter, I can't quite explain. But we were able to look through them with the help of a computer and search out designated subjects and designated names and details that we knew about.
And perhaps for listeners who aren't familiar, I mean, could you just say briefly what WikiLeaks is? And do you know how WikiLeaks got a hold of these documents?
WikiLeaks did not tell us how they got hold of the documents. And WikiLeaks is an organization that is run by Julian Assange, an Australian who is a rather mysterious character, that now specializes in collecting government documents from people who are inside the government who choose to be quote-unquote whistleblowers.
And if there is a way to sum up highlights of 92,000 documents, I mean, what has struck you most in going through these over the last few weeks?
I think on the Afghanistan war, the documents give a really ground view level of how the soldiers and the officers on the ground, what they face every day. Some of these documents are rumors, some of these documents are real, but it gives you a very clear idea of the skill and the depth of the Taliban, who are very much at home in Afghanistan, and that it's those local customs, those cultural things, their kind of armaments, their resilience, their ability to outfox the Americans that come through so clearly. And in Pakistan, I think it enlarges on what American officials and others have long believed and have had some evidence of, that the spy agency, Inter-Services Intelligence, does support the Afghan Taliban who have sanctuary inside Pakistan. So we knew this, but this gives a clearer picture, not a definitive one, but a clearer one.
Steve Clemens of the New America Foundation, you've obviously only had perhaps 24 hours to be going through these 92,000 and not several weeks. Are you surprised by what you've seen so far from these documents? I mean, it does seem like there are some direct new pieces of information that the public didn't know, like, for instance, the fact that the Taliban have been using heat-seeking missiles, but that perhaps overall these documents don't stray too far from the current administration's story about the war. What do you think?
Well, I think there are very, very important nuances, and nuances are just that, you know, shades of gray, but they're important ones. My colleagues at the New America Foundation, who in partnership with Foreign Policy Magazine published the AFPAC channel, have been writing for some time about the civilian deaths in from drone attacks, and they've been in somewhat of a dogfight with the Pentagon for some time, which, you know, has continued to talk about this very constrained, very limited number of civilian innocent deaths as a result of various drone attacks. And, you know, when you look at that gap, these incredible, number of documents, which I have been going through today. I'm in Beijing, China right now, and so I've been up all day while you guys have been at night. And it's just, I invite people to take a tour through them because it's very, very interesting to sort of look at in a more granular way about what's happening out there. So I think that's one aspect of it. I think more importantly, while my colleague from the New York Times just made, I think, a very important point that we knew a lot of what was in these materials, but this confirmed stuff. I've been a skeptic for some time of the general course that we were taking in Afghanistan. Some of my colleagues have been more supportive of the administration's direction, but those skeptics have been talking about the fact that we were essentially at war in Afghanistan with a group that was being funded by our allies in Pakistan, and that these kinds of absurdities with regard to this war were not getting the kind of validation that we would have expected from a more, I suppose, a more honest Pentagon at this point. And so to some degree, this validates the suspicions and the comments from many of the skeptics, and I think it really will bolster the view of those politically that are basically saying this is too costly a war, our allies in Afghanistan are corrupted, competent, and in many cases more brutal than the Taliban. The Taliban are being funded by our supposed allies in Pakistan, and it's a real mess, and I think that's why I think these documents may not be exactly the same as the Pentagon papers, but they have the same feel as being a potential game changer in the way the administration is going to talk to the public about this war.
I want to come back to that idea of the parallel between this and the Pentagon Papers. But first, Jane Perlez at the New York Times. The lead in the New York Times is certainly about the links between the Pakistani intelligence service and the Taliban that seem to be implied, perhaps as an understatement, by these reports. But as your colleagues at The Guardian point out, even in these 92,000 reports, there doesn't seem to be a smoking gun, right, about the Pakistan intelligence service involvement.
Well, I choose to differ slightly. I think that the volume of the reports connecting the ISI to the Afghan Taliban and some of the specifics are quite compelling. For example, the report mentioned two madrasas, the Haqqaniya Madrasa, which is near Peshawar in northern Pakistan, and the Hashmiya Madrasa. I'm quite familiar with the Haqqaniya Madrasa. I've been there several times. It is the alma mater of the boss of the Haqqani network. The Haqqani network is basically the core of the Afghan Taliban. Now, this madrasa, boys are chosen from there to go over the border into Afghanistan. And you see in these reports ISI people allegedly going to these madrasas, attending graduations, being involved in negotiating for boys to go and be suicide bombers. And the chief person from the ISI who's doing this is Hamid Ghul, who is no longer officially with the ISI, but he was director at a very critical time from 87 to 89, and it's very well known in Pakistan that he still works on that side of the ledger, that he still works with the Afghan Taliban, and these reports show some of his activities with them.
And of course, I suppose we should mention that reached, I guess, for comment. He and others mentioned in these reports all strenuously denied that they had any involvement with the Taliban. Is that right?
Well, Hamid Ghul denied that he had anything to do with the Afghan Taliban and said that the intelligence people were pulling the wool over our eyes. But you know, he can go on Pakistani television and, you know, wax eloquently about Afghan Taliban. I mean, you know, spies are not always known for telling the truth.
Steve Clemens, before WikiLeaks and the Times and publications in Europe broke this story about the WikiLeaks papers yesterday, we were going to talk to you today about what General Petraeus had planned to turn around the war effort in Afghanistan. If what seems to be in these reports is the case, that the, for instance, Pakistan's intelligence service involvement in attacks in Afghanistan are so widespread, what does this do to American military and diplomatic strategy for Afghanistan?
Well, I think it complicates the president's ability to communicate a coherent plan to the country, because it looks like there have been so many moving pieces that needed to move in the right direction, and virtually everything that they had sent into motion looks like it's moving in the wrong direction. They've had a leadership change. General Petraeus is a competent, thoughtful guy who thinks a lot about the public relations issues. I think one of the really interesting things that these WikiLeaks help solved to some degree is that those of us debating Afghanistan policy tend to do it with great distance from the realities on the ground in Afghanistan. We tend to be fighting over, you know, the way public relations issues are sculpted within the political environment in America, and that a lot of the players. I wrote a blog piece today that, you know, was always interested that Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, a very good guy, has gone to and is generally a skeptic of the surge of combat troops in Afghanistan, but has been out regularly talking about the successes he continually sees in the partnering of Afghan and U.S. and other ISAF allied military forces. And when you step back and you look at also what we've seen there and other folks that I know that are embedded, it's a very I don't think he's, you know, trying to fabricate something, but it's just the picture that he's getting in a slice of carefully controlled impressions are very different. And I think that, you know, Petraeus has a huge hurdle now that has gotten more complex, because it can be more difficult to control information. If I can add just one element to this,
sure.
About Hamid Ghul, whom I met 3 months ago. Ghul was in Doha with me. We had an opportunity to talk, and there were two people, the former foreign minister of the Taliban and the former Taliban ambassador to Pakistan, you know, who both disavowed so to speak, the Taliban, but I don't think that's a deep disavowal. Most people look at them as the likely interlocutors with any Taliban deal-making, and they spent all their time with Hamid Ghul. And another one of the Pakistani generals I was with, who was fairly candid, told me that no matter what we were hearing in the American press, that the enthusiasm that Pakistan's generals had for the strategic depth that Afghanistan gave them is very hard to underestimate. And that's the reality that we finally see in these WikiLeaks Afghanistan war logs. So I completely agree with Jane that we get a very distorted picture where we're at.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC AM and FM and on the web at WNYC.org. I'm Isaac Davy Aronson, filling in for Brian Lehrer, and we're speaking with Steve Clemens, Director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation, and Jane Perlez, Chief New York Times Correspondent in Pakistan. Jane, let's talk about one other aspect of these documents, and that's the sort of patchwork story of civilian deaths that they paint. They're portrayed as mistakes, not as a systematic failure, it seems. But there's also quite a lot of talk about how those civilian deaths are undermining the broader effort there.
Well, I have to say, I'm a Pakistan person. I don't cover Afghanistan. But that said, I talk a lot to my colleagues who cover Afghanistan, and, you know, I've covered quite a few wars. And obviously, if you kill civilians whose hearts you're trying to win, it doesn't help. And I think that this McChrystal, for a reason, tried to put down a new rules of engagement, which were aimed at curtailing civilian deaths. So, yes, they're very, very harmful to the American image and cause in Afghanistan. I'd just like to say one thing about drones and civilian deaths. Steve was speaking about drones in Afghanistan. There are, of course, drones operating, CIA-operated drones in Pakistan. And actually, I think one of the reasons that the American administration turns the other way to the whole question of the ISI and Afghan Taliban, they don't turn the other way. Why they can't convince the Pakistanis to do something about it is that the Americans have gotten one big thing from Pakistan, and that is the permission to run drones over the tribal areas and to kill al-Qaeda operatives and leaders. And that program has been quite successful, particularly in the last year under the Obama administration, in getting al-Qaeda operatives. And it has been quite successful in minimizing civilian casualties. I think this is one case where there have not been very many civilian casualties. These drone missiles are remarkably accurate. And I've spoken to a number of people from the tribal areas in North Waziristan and South Waziristan who were scared to death of the drones, but who do say in the last year there have been minimal civilian casualties.
Steve, as I said before, I wanted to come back to you on the parallel to the Pentagon Papers. I mean, you said you feel
sure.
Like these documents are equivalent to that, and I'm wondering if you really think that that they can have that impact. A, because perhaps so much of what's in there is stuff that we sort of perhaps already knew, and also just is the political situation different now in a way that release of documents like this just can't have that same political impact?
Well, you know, as I was trying to say and articulate earlier, maybe I didn't do it well. These statements may have said some of the things that some of us knew, but not all of us accepted. I think that many of the key points that are in there, and I mentioned today with Seymour Hersh, when Seymour Hersh was out there saying that we have a group engaged with death squads and have given people essentially the decision-making ability in the field to determine what they do with someone, even executing them, the different thing to execute someone who's under your control. Hersh came out and said this and was widely ridiculed and was really challenged by the government and lots of other sources. And when you get into these documents, the picture that Hersh was trying to deliver last year is very much what we see coming out of these documents now. So what you see is the documents are validating those who begun raising questions about how this war was being conducted, what some of the downsides of the war were, how strong the Taliban was, what its tools have been, and some of the consequences of some military attacks where, you know, you've been killing people and not being upfront about it and pretty much lying about it. So on those levels, it makes it much more difficult for the administration to do it. Now, while the Pentagon Papers showed, I think, a much more systematic national lie, if you will, and obfuscation and incredible things, that is in a qualitative way incredibly different than the release of these papers. They may very well both be game-changing moments because it raises the skepticism of the war. There was already a building momentum of skepticism about this war that we've been seeing the last month to 2 months that's been capped off by General McChrystal's firing. But there's a much more palpable resistance, and I think that's what these kinds of documents do. And I think that the notion that someone out there leaked these, I remember in 2004 talking to Ellsberg, and Ellsberg said to me that he hoped with regard to the war on terror that there was a spy or a bureaucrat or a foreign service officer or someone with a several, you know, foot thick stack of files in their classified safe that they would go put out into the public, and that person would be taking huge personal risks but would have to be embraced publicly for his or her, you know, sacrifice on behalf of the rest of the country. Well, someone has done that. And one of the interesting things is going to be is whether what we've seen in really the largest dump of classified documents at one time that I know of is whether this prompts others to do the same thing. So I think that we're at a potential turning point, just as the Pentagon Papers, I think, played that role before.
And of course, we'll have to see if it prompts punishment as well, since the Obama administration has shown itself to be very unfriendly to leakers thus far. We're going to have to leave it there, even though there's so much more to talk about. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, filling in for Brian Lehr. We've been speaking with Steve Clemens, director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation, and Jane Perlez, New York Times chief correspondent in Pakistan. Thanks so much to you both for being with us on WNYC.
Thank you.
Up next, WNYC's own Bob Henley on Governor Christie's plans for Atlantic City and the Meadowlands. Stay tuned.